Dr. Daniel Pauly, professor and director of UBC's Fisheries Center. Dr. Pauly, you've been trying to get a global picture, a global portrait of the world's fisheries. And I gather that as far as you've gone, the picture isn't a pretty one.
No, it's not pretty at all. And in fact, I'm invited in various venues to present this, and it's almost like I'm some sort of sadist and the audience a bunch of masochists, because what they hear is really that things are bad. But there are solutions to some of this, and some of them are obvious. Rolling back the excess number of boats that we have, especially big boats, so you can leave the small fishers continuing their fishing, which is environmentally not so damaging as the fishing by with big vessels, especially trawling. So there are solutions, setting up marine protected areas in various places to maintain the stocks of long-lived fish, etc. So there are ways.
I was down in French Polynesia about a year ago, and people down there are worried sick. The livelihood that they've had back for centuries is not only threatened, it's virtually gone.
Yeah, it is. French Polynesia would be a very typical example of what happens in many, many coral reef countries. On top of it, then the coral reefs themselves are threatened by global warming. So that is very, very dangerous and sad. Entire countries in the Pacific will actually disappear.
Are the causes more than one? Is it more than just human depletion of the stocks? Are there such things as global warming and other natural phenomena that are causing this?
Nowadays, it's very difficult to say if a phenomenon is natural. If the sea level rise, for example, is in part due to global warming, the high increased frequency of storms is also due to global warming, which actually goes back to us through burning fossil fuel. So we have this weird situation now that it's very difficult to distinguish what a natural phenomenon is from a phenomenon that we generated. And getting back to aquaculture, pollution that we induced through aquaculture is very difficult to separate then from natural processes. And so some people will always be able to say it's not us. Yes. So you have to work from first principles. If you have a floating pig farm, you can expect what pigs produce to be dropping down on the ground of the sea, on the bottom of the sea, etc.
Sometimes I think the problem is with people in British Columbia, they don't understand what it would be like if things were reversed. For example, supposing we had no salmon in our waters, all we had were sardines, anchovies, herring, and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And a big bad country from South America came along and took them all away to feed fish farms.
That's
in
right.
Chile, we'd be raising hell.
We certainly would. Incidentally, the funny thing is, people always say that when you farm salmon, that the anchovies and sardines that you use, nobody would eat them. And I recently had the opportunity of being in Spain with the American actor Ted Danson, and the fishers, they served us a dish of anchovies, which was absolutely delicious. And this guy, Ted Danson, kept saying, oh my gosh, it's the best fish I ever ate. And here is fish that is usually ground up and fed to salmon. That is actually very good food for people. And there are many countries that are now, that don't have their fish anymore because it's actually ground up for salmon.
In just a minute or two that we've got left, have you at this point been able to identify some strategies that we can employ just at least to get started?
Well, inform the public, because the public is not well informed about these situations. That's why I'm here.
That's the main thing.
That's the main thing, yeah.
All right, what about in British Columbia? We understand that the government, both the federal and the provincial governments, are hell-bent to extend the fish farm industry up and down the coast of British Columbia.
Well, you know, governments come and go. And if a government does something that is manifestly silly, then it will also end up doing other things that are silly. And when you have too many things that are silly, then the voters then decide to get rid of the government, because we live in democracies.
Now, you have done a study that was funded, as I understand it, from the Pew Charitable Trust.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they were called into question as being not independent when we talked about the survey into the healthiness of fish. And the people, the fish farm people and everybody else said, oh, wait a minute, that was from environmental money. Of course, my question was, well, where else would you get the money? But do you feel in any way compromised by getting money from a charity that does do environmental
work? Well, in science, you do not actually start when somebody presents results you don't like. You don't actually start by attacking the person who presents the result. You have to actually go after the results themselves, because if we started questioning people in terms of who they are, You could, we would do the same thing that the Nazi did, where they say, well, relativity theory cannot be right because Einstein is Jewish.
Yeah.
That kind of attack, personal attack, doesn't get you anywhere. You have to show that the thing is wrong or show that the thing is right if you're making a case, independently of who it is who makes it.
And one last thing before we go. I think I've got a minute. I can't tell with that damn clock, but we'll do it anyway. The study that came out, and you and I talked about on the air earlier in January in Science Magazine, about the dangers of eating farm fish. You have no questions about that. That's
well,
a valid study.
It reported a certain quantity of dioxin and other pesticide in fish. It's there.
Okay, we got to go, I'm told. I got a finger that tells me better time than the clock does. Hey, how about that? Wow. Take a bow, Dr. Pollock. I think they may think that you're one of those cricketers that whipped England yesterday. We'll be back with them.